going to Miami a few weeks ago to do our course, and I was on my laptop and I pulled up one of my old fights, ring entrance to one of my old fights, and I've never watched it before. I've just forgotten about boxing. This is 2 weeks ago, and I'm watching it and I'm listening to the commentators like talking. Tony Jeffries, he's a huge prospect, he's going to do big things, and the crowds are screaming and they're all chanting my name, and I'm on the flight and I just start crying and like probably shaking like that. I'm like, fuck, really? I couldn't stop crying.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Take Flight podcast with me, Mark Whittle, a peak performance podcast where we speak with the best in the world at what they do. From the very top athletes and performers in sport to the boldest and most successful entrepreneurs and lifestyle specialists. This week, we have an unbelievable guest. He's smashed all three of these areas. You may have seen on my Instagram or heard on previous episodes, I planned a trip to the US to meet some amazing people and record a bunch of episodes to share with you guys. And the first stop on this tour was LA, and I had the pleasure of sitting down with ex-professional, undefeated boxer, Olympic bronze medalist, and now entrepreneur, Tony Jeffries. Tony is an ultimate peak performer, competing for 17 years, fighting 106 times, winning the bronze medal for Team GB in the 2008 Beijing Olympics, then turning pro and going undefeated until ultimately injury led him to retirement. Clearly, he had an unbelievable boxing career, and aside from turning pro and never being beaten, his Olympic medal came at a time when only Amir Khan and Audley Harrison had won medals before for GB at previous Olympics. And in the 2008 Beijing Olympics, Tony, David Price and James DeGale were the guys who won medals in that Olympics. So he is among the absolute greats within boxing, and he's just an all-round legend. And if that's not enough, after boxing, Tony set up his boxing gym called Box and Burn. He moved to LA, set up two sites, one in Santa Monica and one in Brentwood, and they're widely known as the best boxing gyms in the city. They're amazing. And all the big shots go there. I was listening to Joe Rogan not too long ago when he had Travis Barker on. He's the drummer from Blink-182, and he was talking about getting into boxing and how much he loves it and that he trains at Box and Burn. And I had an amazing session myself, which I'll speak about in a moment, and saw all sorts of people down there as well. Such a good vibe. It was great to hear the story of Tony leaving the only thing that he knew, professional boxing, and transitioning into business and making it a huge, huge success. He also has an online boxing training academy and speaks a lot about the power of contribution in this episode, which I loved so much, as he wants to train as many people as possible to learn how to teach boxing so then they can impact others off the back of Tony's training. Tony also continues to do one-to-ones, and when I met him, he'd just come from Robbie Williams' house where they'd been training on his tennis court. It was all very LA and I absolutely loved it. Please stay tuned to the end of this episode as I have a huge announcement that I'm so, so excited to share, which hands down is the highlight of starting this podcast, which might sound a little bit weird because I am recording this intro while in LA and this week's been amazing by itself, but please stay tuned for the announcement at the end. It is unreal and I'm so, so pleased that I'm going to be able to do this and can't wait to share the news with you, and I hope as many of you as possible can be involved in it. But before that, we have one of my favourite episodes to date. Tony is such a genuine guy. I really, really loved sitting down and speaking with him. I trained in his gym yesterday, as I mentioned, first thing in the morning, and it's one of the best sessions I've had. Everything from the choice of the music to the trainers who worked there, they were amazing. I'll definitely be going back the next time in LA, even though I'm absolutely broken this morning after I've woken up. But with that said, please enjoy my chat with the legendary Olympian turned entrepreneur, Tony Jeffries. Thanks for listening. Tony, welcome to the Take Flight podcast.
Thank you for having me, mate. Thank you for having me.
Oh, not at all. Thanks for coming on, mate. We're here in LA.
Yeah, we're in West LA in Brentwood in the Box and Burn office, the headquarters. That's brand new, so welcome, mate. You're the first guest we've had in here, apart from the staff,
Oh, amazing. I had to come all the way from London to interview a Macam in LA.
I know, how mad is that, right? How mad is that? Hopefully it'll be worth it and your listeners will enjoy this show.
Yeah, oh no, look, I've been really looking forward to it. I spoke about it on the podcast before. I've been boxing for about 6 months now and getting more and more into it. And yeah, so I've watched all your stuff online and listened to your podcast as well. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? So you're just boxing for fitness?
Yeah, just fitness, like pad work, do 30, 45 minutes a week.
Yeah, it's the best. The best workout there, I think, especially for someone, I mean, you tell me, someone like yourself who's just getting into it, you know, it's a really good workout because you can always get better, and you're learning a new skill rather than just going to the gym, running on a treadmill or lifting weights. You know, you're learning a new skill as well.
Literally, that's the reason why I did it. So I used to play football and I couldn't anymore because of injuries, and I just missed that like cognitive skill, like learning something, having right. that learning a skill, like being challenged, having to think as well. And like obviously if you do something wrong, you're getting hit on the head or hit in the face or whatever,
so. Right, yeah. Then that's why it's the biggest trend in the fitness industry right now, because you know it's very addictive and you're learning something and you're getting great results as well with your body changing and yeah. the results for your mind as well. People don't really think about boxing as being good for your mind. They think because you're going to get punched in the head, but if you don't get punched in the head, you know it's really good for your brain.
Yeah,
because you work on everything.
Yeah, exactly. What's your like opinion on getting people to do sparring and stuff? Like, how soon?
I'm pretty against sparring, yeah. and unless you're going to have a fight, you know, I wouldn't really spar. Maybe very light sparring, shoulder and body sparring, do that all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't see the reason in people getting punched in the head for fun, you know. And this is something that I think strongly about fighters, about the brain health of fighters now. You know, I've been a fighter forever. I competed for 17 years, 106 fights, got punched in the head thousands of times, and I didn't think anything of it at the time. But now I'm pretty against being punched in the head, yeah. because the damage that I can do is mad.
Yeah. Do you still spar now?
No, I've never sparred now for probably three years.
Really?
And I'll not spar again for the rest of my life. I'll hopefully not get punched in the head for the rest of my life. But I do shoulder sparring and body sparring all the time, and sometimes one slips through and hits you in the head.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no reason for me to ever get punched in the head again.
Yeah. And was that your decision, or was that like a doctor's order?
It was my decision. I'm part of a study in Vegas. It's called for this big, massive hospital. It's called the Cleveland Clinic, and they're doing the biggest fighter brain study in the world. And so far, they've done, I think, over 1,000 fighters, where you go in and they'll do an MRI scan. They'll put you through some computer tests, some speech tests, reading, balance, and they test you on all these things. And this will tell you if you're punch drunk or not, you know.
Yeah.
But you got to go back every year and get it done. And I was really happy. And when I went, they said, I was 28 at the time. For a 28-year-old, your results come back and, yeah. and you're average. And I was like, great.
As in average against other fighters or normal?
Not against normal 28-year-olds.
Really?
So I was really happy. But he said, you need to come back over years for us to really be able to see, because you might have been above average 2 years ago and it might be slowly declining,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
your brain health. And then I went back the next year and it improved. So yeah, I was really happy with that.
Amazing.
But yeah, I'm worried about it all the time, and I'm part of this study, and I think it's very, very dangerous. Boxing is very, very yeah. dangerous.
Mate, really interesting. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that later yeah. on, if that's all right. So just to start things off with then, I'd love to hear from you kind of what you do day to day. What's your typical week look like? So kind of who right. are you today?
Yeah, so I co-own two boxing fitness gyms here in Los Angeles, one in Santa Monica, one in Brentwood, and then I've got a co-owner boxing and fitness education program, the Boxing Academy, where we teach personal trainers and fitness professionals how to teach boxing. And then I've got a couple of clients that I teach boxing to as well. So my day-to-day is kind of running the two businesses and then training a few people as well. We've got like 45 staff now working
yeah,
for
wow.
with the three companies. With two companies, we've got 45 staff now. So managing the staff is a big thing. Keeping the staff motivated, working on new creative ideas to help the business grow. I'm doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't ask for a better job. My job is amazing right now. I yeah. absolutely love my life. It's really, really good. And I retired from boxing in 2012 with hand injuries. And it was the worst moment, one of the worst moments of my life. The worst moment of your life, having to retire from boxing. Because I'd done it since I was 10 years old, you know. I didn't know what I was going to do. I never had a plan B. All I had was a plan A, which was boxing. And, yeah, it was terrible. And now, looking back, retiring from the boxing was the best thing that ever happened in my life. These bad hands really were, because, you know, I don't know where I would be right now in Sunderland, still boxing. But instead, now I'm living in West Los Angeles, loving life.
Amazing.
Doing all right.
It's funny, there's so many times I speak to people and it's like the lowest periods of their life yeah. lead to the best things that they ever experienced.
Yeah. One door closes, one door opens. But that being said, you know, you've got to when that door does open, you've got to jump through the door. Yeah. There's too many people. There's opportunities there. They'll not take them.
Yeah.
I'm a huge optimist. You know, if I see an opportunity, I'm going to grab it with both hands and try it. If it doesn't work, so what? If it works, brilliant.
Yeah, I love that, mate. I want to definitely talk about that as well later on. So you said that you started boxing when you were 10.
10 years.
When was the first time you like, do you remember it, like first time putting gloves on, and who introduced you to it?
I remember walking in the gym for the first time. So my uncle was a professional fighter. My granddad, his dad, took me to the gym when I was 10. And I remember going in the gym and thinking, this is good. And then as I got a little bit older, I'm talking like 12, 13, I'd had a few fights by then, but I was got a bit bored of it, and I wanted to play outside, get up no good, because I'm from the, you know, Sunderland, from a pretty rough neighbourhood in Sunderland, and I want to get up, play out with my mates and get up no good and run around, knock on people's doors and run away and do whatever the fuck my mates were doing. And my dad forced us to go to boxing, and it got to the point where I hated boxing. I didn't want to go because, you know, I was sick of it. I wanted to do something else, but he was like, no, you're going to boxing. If you don't go to boxing, you're not playing out with your friends.
So how long were you doing? It was like every day you made to go there?
No, right? it was like 3-4 times a week at the time. So it wasn't even that much for an hour. But I'd go in and then I'd spar and I'd get punched and my nose would bleed, I'd have blood all over. And it's very hard to keep a kid doing something like that, you know, doing something hard, you know, especially when computers are out now and you can't sit and play on a computer. Yeah. But my dad made us do it, and he used to always say, you'll thank us for it someday, you'll thank us for it someday. And you know, and then after the Olympics, obviously, I thanked him for it, you know.
Amazing.
And that's it. I went all the way through school. I was a schoolboy national champion at 14, again at 15, again at 16. Won junior ABA titles, champion there from 15, 16, 17. Then I went to the senior ABAs, senior championships. I won them. So I was like a national champion, like when I was boxing, boxed for England and Great Britain 57 times, and then went to the Commonwealth Games, went to the Olympics in 2008 and got the bronze medal there. But yeah, it's been a great journey and a great boxing career. Turned professional after that, had 10 pro fights, undefeated, then I had bad hands and I retired.
What was it then? What was the injury?
I had a hole in one knuckle and a hole in the other tendon on my other hand. If you see there, I've got scars. Big scars on my hands. It was rough. Like I say, it was the worst time of my life.
Yeah.
But no, no, it was the best thing that happened.
Yeah. Was the highlight the Olympics for you?
Yeah, the highlight was the Olympics. So when I was 16, I got put on an 8-year training programme. They got what Great Britain done, they got all of the national champions when they were around 16, because they say the peak time for amateur boxing is 23, 24.
Yeah.
So they knew for this 8-year programme they were getting put together, if they start developing them when they were 16, 15, 16, 17, you know, by the time they get that age, the peak age, they're going to be great. So I went through the full 8 years with the goal of going to the Beijing Olympics and got through there. Finally, I qualified in 2007. And qualifying was amazing, the best feeling ever. Fought in Chicago, beat the American to qualify in Chicago.
Yeah.
Was the American team captain at the time. There's thousands of people there in the crowd just saying, USA, USA. And I beat him, qualified, and it was amazing. Then went to the games and, unbelievable experience. And then we come back with a medal. It was like the icing on the cake, you know. There was only three of us to do. It was James DeGale, David Price and myself that year.
Wow.
The previous 8 years, there'd only ever been two Olympic medalists from Great Britain. In 8 years, one was Amir Khan, the other one was Ollie Harrison.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very, very hard to get an Olympic medal. But we did it.
And every one of them you've named is like big names in boxing as well.
Yeah, big names in boxing, yeah. And they're very well known. And, you know, I'm getting well known now, not so much through the boxing, but through what I've done after boxing.
Yeah.
Which I know that I'm known in the boxing circuit now in England through what I've done after boxing.
Yeah.
It's good because it's given other fighters hope that there is life after boxing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to, with my boxing education program, I'm trying to show them that and help them in that way.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's one of the reasons, again, why I really wanted to speak with you, because there's that second career afterwards in business and you've made that transition. Just speaking on the Olympics then a little bit again, what was it like living in the Olympic Village, and then what was it like ultimately standing on the podium as well?
Yeah, I mean, living in the Olympic Village was class, because I was with all of my teammates, like, you know, like Carl Yaffa, who's a world champion now, Billy Joe Saunders, Bradley Saunders, and then James DeGale, David Price. it was really, really good because we were kind of like brothers, you know. We went through years and years of training and we're there together and we had a laugh. It was funny, but you know.
Did you get to go out and stuff as well?
When we went out, we were like celebrities in China because we had our Olympic tracksuits on and everyone was jumping, come and getting pictures of us. And it was brand new. That getting pictures taken with people was brand new to us, you know. We were like normal kids and then people want pictures with us. It was mad. we never really went out. We never went out. We went out a little bit. But, and then being in the village was class, seeing all these other athletes, famous athletes, walking around, like Kobe Bryant, LeBron James was there, Nadal, the tennis player, Tim, Andy Murray, he came to watch us fight as well.
Really?
So it was really good. And then it was the quarterfinals of the Olympics when I was fighting for the Olympic medal. Mm-hmm. I was fighting a tough Hungarian and, you know, I was really nervous going into that fight because all I wanted to do was go to the Olympics. Then this was the big fight to get the medal, and I knew I was like 7 points up going in the last round, so all I had to do was survive. So that's all I'd done, survive. And the bell went and I jumped around the ring like a madman, like, yes, I've got the Olympic medal. Best feeling of my life, you know, best feeling of my life. Have you heard of Wayne McCulloch?
No,
it's funny because Wayne McCulloch, he's a former professional boxer. He won the WBC world title. He won an Olympic silver medal in, I think, 98. And when I had my first kid, we had a baby shower, and he's got a daughter as well, and he said, Tony, he said, I tell you what, having a kid is the best feeling in the world. I went, really? Better than the Olympic medal? He went, oh, yeah, it's better than the Olympic medal. I was like, fuck me, this is going to be interesting. I can't wait for this now. So then my daughter was born. And when she was born, she had breathing difficulties. The doctor pulled her out. He was fucking whacking her shit, putting stuff down her throat, down her nose. And it was like, it was horrible. She was fine now. And I was thinking, fuck, when I have Wayne, Wayne's full of shit. Wayne, what are you talking about, Wayne? I was expecting this, the highest of highs. And then, so it was a big anti-climax having a kid.
That's hilarious, mate. So are you still mates with all them now? Do you still stay in touch?
I still talk to the boys now, and Jim Tegill's just recently retired.
Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of them's coming to the end of their careers right now, you know. I don't know what David Price is going to do. I think he's got a few more fights in him, and then James and the Smith brothers as well, you know. Yeah. I'm close with them over here last week. But yeah, I'm still friends with them, still keep in touch on social media. But it is hard, me being on the other side of the world, you know.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. So, mate, speaking about some of the training, you said you're on that long camp for the build-up to the Olympics, and obviously your training that you had must have been possibly even more intense for when you were a professional.
Yeah.
What were some of the standout qualities? Because this is, in essence, a peak performance podcast.
Right.
What were the kind of things that really, really worked for you, and what were some of the difficult things that you found had a huge impact on your performance?
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, like, training for the Olympics is way more professional than training as a professional.
No, really?
Yeah. Fighting as a world-class amateur is way more professional than professional boxing, and we're getting that in a little bit later, but it's like...
Why is that?
Well, for a start, when you're training on the Olympic programme, you've got a team behind you that's lottery-funded. They've got lots of money there. You've got masseuses, sports psychologists, physios, the best trainers from around the world. They're all hired. You've got the best facility in the world, in the EIS Centre in Sheffield, and you're getting your travel expenses paid. Everything's paid for, your equipment. And then as soon as you turn professional, you've got to find your own trainer. You've got to pay for your own massage. If you're injured, you've got to pay for your own physio. You've got to find your own trainer.
Yeah.
And then when you come into the fights as well, I was the A side, so I was an Olympian. In all of my fights, I fought like a lot of journeymen, and I was sponsored by Lonsdale, so I could only fight in Lonsdale gloves. Lonsdale would give me the gloves 2 weeks before the fight, so now I'm wearing my Lonsdale gloves. I'm training in my fight gloves 2 weeks before a fight. I've got my opponent's gloves there as well, you know. I'm wearing these gloves in, I'm doing whatever I want with the gloves. And then I give my opponent these brand new hard gloves, and I'm wearing some wearing gloves. I wore the same gloves for 3 fights in a row. No one ever checked the gloves. Not once did they check the gloves that I was wearing before the fight. I could have well 8 ounce gloves and wore 10 ounce on them. Never got checked. I never got drug tested once as a professional either. For my 10 fights, the accommodation that the promoter would pay for was often shit. You never had a nutritionist. If you want a nutritionist, you had to pay for it yourself. Yeah. You know, and So yeah, you had with the world class Olympic program, you had the best support in the world. When you turn professional, it's on you to do it all, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not educated in finding the best physio in the world or the best nutritionist. That's not what I'm good at, you know.
Yeah.
On fighters, not good at. So, but wearing your own gloves, how mad's that? You know, I can wear the gloves I've been wearing for a year and fighting them.
Yeah.
You know, it's proper messed up,
Mate, that's mad, isn't it?
Mad.
Yeah.
But then talking about the training for the Olympics, the number one thing to be successful at boxing and in life and in business is consistency. Consistency and consistently working on the basics. Working on the basics of boxing, working on the jab every session, working on that hook to the body. I'd spend hours working on the hook to the body to get a grid, and then I'd stop loads of opponents with a hook to the body, you know. Yeah. And that comes down the same with in business, you know, getting the basic shit right and being consistent with it will make you successful in that. Same with anything you do. But yeah, definitely with the training, the consistency of doing the same shit in it.
I suppose that comes back to you saying, like, consistently going to the gym when you were a kid and you didn't want to and your dad was forcing you to do it. Maybe that has installed that in there.
Yeah, I definitely think it has, you know. Just doing the same shit day in, day out, get better at it. You see a lot of young fighters coming up now is trying to do fancy shit, and this might go for you, I've never seen your boxing training, but, like, you know, if you it's funny because when we see Instagram and the highlights videos we see on there, it's all the fancy stuff. People doing fancy mitt work.
Yeah.
If it's a fight, it's a fancy knockout. It might be someone putting the hands behind the back and knocking them out, you know. We never see any really good basic boxing.
Yeah.
So people don't really try and do that. They try and do the fancy shit before they get the fundamentals basics down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what fighters need to do, really perfect the basics. And all these fancy fighters you see on the telly, they've spent hours and hours and hours working on the jab, working on the straight right hand, the left hook, before they do on any of the fancy shit.
Yeah.
And it's the same what we were doing in the training for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy.
The foundations that you found
it. Yeah, the foundations.
Same in business as well, isn't it? It's transferable into the business world as well.
Big time.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that. All right, Tony, what I'm interested to know a little bit more about now is you spoke about how some of the likes of James DeGale and other boxers who were around when you were fighting are starting to retire. I know you spoke about your injuries with your hand, which must have been a difficult thing, which, to be honest, a lot of athletes finish because of injuries. But interested to know kind of whether you were forced into that, whether you sort of threw the towel in, and I suppose you spoke about the difficulties you had afterwards. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so I was forced into retirement. I had surgery on my hands, expecting them to get better. They never got better.
So the scar from here, from surgery?
Yeah, there, and then there. They never got better, and so, yeah, I got forced to retire, but by that time, I'd moved to LA, I'd met my business partner, we'd started doing boot camps on the beach.
So you were still a professional fighter when you moved to LA?
Yeah, okay. So I used to train out here and fight back in the UK, and then, I come out here just looking for a bit of work while I was retired, trying to get better, you know. And that's when I met my business partner Kevin Watson, and he was working in the little gym in Santa Monica, and that was it, really. That's how it all started. I tried everything on my hands. I got PRP, where they take the blood out of your hip and then they divide the red blood cells and white blood cells and inject it in. I tried that. I was sleeping with casts on, trying to keep my hands in shape. You see, it sticks out, that knuckle. Not good, but I was sleeping with cast on. I tried everything. I was sleeping with electric gloves on. I put electric currents into your hands because that was supposed to help, but I never did, you know.
Does it still cause you pain now?
Yeah.
Does it
cause me pain now? Because now I do shoulder and body spawn with clients and stuff, and every time I land that, it hurts.
Yeah.
But so I got forced to retire, but like I said, it was amazing.
Yeah, and what was that? What kind of did that do for your mindset? Did you think you already had a pretty strong mindset from all the boxing training and the fighting you've done in the past?
No, it was really tough. I remember when I announced it on my Facebook page, and I wrote a big thing out thanking everyone for my career, and I was just crying my eyes out. The tears just running down my face when I was writing this big, I'm not going to fight anymore. Because I'd done it since I was 10, and then I retired when I was 27. I never stuck in at school. I never had any qualifications or anything. Although I've always had a good business mind, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. So it was really, really tough for us to do that. And then I started drinking, got fat for a bit, and and that was it, you know. And it was a really tough moment. But then I had a great family around us, and my wife's amazing, and the kind of kept us right, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I did commit to business in America, I took me mind off boxing and put it into business, and put all the energy and hard work from boxing into business, and then I just got successful with this and pretty fast. And I feel like I haven't worked hard at business, you know. Working hard is training every day in, day out, putting that graft in, dieting, having opponents to think about, having people trying to punch your head in. That's hard. Teaching people out of box is a piece of piss, mate.
Yeah.
Getting up at 6 a.m. to come to the gym to clean the floors, what we were doing when we first started, piece of piss. Meeting new people and telling them about the benefits of boxing, it's so easy compared to fighting. So you know, I've transferred the work from there into this, and it's went easy.
Yeah, I love that, mate. That's amazing. I think a lot of people can take some advice away from that, because whether it's could be an ex-athlete moving into business, or if you're just moving from one industry to another, I think that's really it's really good.
And one thing why I think I've been successful with teaching boxing, coming from the boxing world, and this is what I try and teach other boxers, is when you're teaching someone for fitness, it's completely different to teaching someone who's a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, like in our gyms now, you'll go in there, people might not have the perfect form, or they might, because they're not trying to fight, you know. But where a boxer would normally say, no, you need to do it this way, and try and perfect them, like our coaches used to do to us, in the fitness industry, you're not going to get far with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I've had an open mind with that stuff, and I've been like, as long as this person is having a good workout, they're learning to box, they're having fun, and they're getting results.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Where boxers' mindsets are a little bit different.
Yeah, you know? There's more on the line in there, much more at risk.
Yeah, right.
Mate, do you know, I really like what you're saying there, because I think I recently went to, do you know Tony Robbins?
Like
the big personal development.
Yeah.
I recently went to his thing in the UK called Unleash the Power Within. It was like a 4-day event. It was amazing. It was very, very intense, but it was amazing. But one of the big takeaways I got from that was, if you're in a period of difficulty, or you're struggling or suffering in any way at all, there's three key things you can focus on to get yourself out of it. The first one is changing your language. So you've probably got some self-doubt or negativity going on in your mind. So if you change your language, it's going to help. So you're flipping it to be more positive. You change physically, or you change your physiology. So you get up, you move, you go for a run, you do some exercise, you go in the gym, whatever. Again, that's taking yourself out of your mind and into your body. And the last one, which is what you nailed on there, was focus. So putting your mind on something else and focusing on something. So you came out of the boxing world and were able to focus on the new business that you were starting.
Yeah.
And obviously that was the thing that helped you.
That's great, and that's what I've done. So I came out of the boxing world, I got down and all that, and then I focused on the boxing and boxing for fitness and business. And that was, it was 2012, so that was like 7 years ago now, right? So I've never dealt, I've forgetting about boxing, I've had my blinkers on, I'm going straight forward in the business. Then I was on a flight going to Miami a few weeks ago to do our course, and I was on my laptop and I pulled up one of my old fights, ring entrance to one of my old fights, and I've never watched it before. I've just forgotten about boxing. This is 2 weeks ago, talking 7 years ago, and I'm watching it and I'm listening to the commentators, like talking Tony Jeffries, he's a huge prospect, he's going to do big things, and the crowds are screaming and they're all chanting my name, and I'm on the flight and I just start crying and like probably shaking like that. I'm like, fuck, really? I couldn't stop crying. Like I said, it's 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, what? This is so weird. And I spoke to my mate after I spoke to Glenn, and I was telling him, and I spoke to my wife, and they were like, they both said the same thing. It's because like I've never dealt with it before. I've never thought about it before. And now I've went back to that, and I'm like, I couldn't control my emotions. It was so strange. I've never had an experience that before in my life. So that's why, because I was so focused on business, I forget about that shit.
Shut it out.
Yeah, but then I opened up to it again. We talking 7 years later, and it's really hit us.
Mate, that's amazing. I'll talk about that a lot on this podcast, like burying stuff. It's like the sand over the bullet wound story. Like it's not going to you're not going to be able to bury it forever. Like, it's going to come up at some stage. That's good. You've obviously held on to that energy for a long time.
That's what happened. It was fucking mad, mate.
Yeah.
It was mad. Yeah, it's definitely being covered up,
that,
you know, for that many years.
Must have felt a lot better after that.
Yeah, it was good to watch, but as well, I was weeded out by how I couldn't control my emotions, because normally if you're going to cry, you can hold it in.
Mm.
But this, I'm proper shaking, and there's people sitting next to me. But,
yeah. Did they notice that you were watching yourself?
I don't know. I don't know. No, it was a big, probably a 300-pound fella sitting next to us playing Candy Crush on his phone. Didn't give a shit.
You were having this big emotional moment. Yeah. You playing Candy Crush.
Playing Candy Crush, eating fucking chocolate biscuits. He was. They come over. I sat next to the biggest man in the world, and they come in with a trade, like, do you want a banana, a packet of crisps or whatever, and he put his hand in, he got about six chocolate biscuits, and he's there with crumbs all down his chest. It's true story.
What more motivation do you need to get back in the gym after that?
All right.
Mate, do you think there's something to be said for, like, a lot of people who are high achievers say no plan B, you know, what was it that the Vikings used to say, is like, burn the boats. So when you're going into battle, you've got no boat to escape off of anyway, so you have to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, I believe in that massively. But at the same time, so for you then, perhaps you wouldn't have felt so bad when your career came to an end if you had a plan B.
Right. I believe in plan Bs. I really do. I never had one, but I believe in them. I see I never had one. What I used to do, I had 10 professional fights. Every time I'd have two fights, I'd buy a house. I get a deposit, put it down as a mortgage, because I knew I'm investing in the future.
Yeah.
So, although it wasn't a plan B, it was an investment and thinking about the future, thinking about life ahead after boxing. With boxing, I think you should focus on stuff like investments, smart investments.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's tough for you to think about what you would do if you packed boxing in, or if you quit boxing, or if it got took away from you. Because if you are, you're not totally focused on what you're doing right now, what's in front of you. But I really think it depends on the person. I really do. Like right now, I've got to think about other forms of income right now, because although I've got the gym and the education program, you know, there's always something might happen. The boxing fitness industry might go out of fashion, and I might have to think of something else. It's not a very secure job when you're working for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think having something in the back of your mind all the time, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you say that, mate. I always hear people say, like, at least four streams of income. So whether it's a salary, or whether it's another side business or an investment that you've got, or something like that, or a pension, like, at least you've got lots of different streams of income coming in.
And that's solid. But what you should do, you should make sure you're focused on your main source of income and get that solid before you focus on other sources of income. Are you going to get a little bit from each one rather than getting one? Like right now, I've got the gyms that pays me bills and helps me car and whatever. I'm solid with that. And then I've got the education program that's given us a bit extra. Then I've got the personal training, what gives us a bit extra. And then I've got my houses at home, what's a little bit extra. So I've got them. But if I went balls deep on this one, on personal training, it's going to take me away from the main source of income, which is the gym. You know,
no, I love that, mate. You're basically saying remove the distraction.
Yeah,
unless that one's solid,
right?
Then you can start to give it a bit more attention.
Yeah,
I love that, man.
And then it's the same with where do you put your time? Because right now I'm very busy with all of these. I've been offered 8 podcasts this year, or 9 podcasts, and I've turned them all down. I think this is the only one I've done, because the time now, it's the most valuable thing when you've got so much business going on, you know.
Well, I appreciate it, mate. I'm glad we're doing it.
So, mate, I'm glad.
So, mate, you're talking about the business there. You mentioned, obviously, setting it up. It's not just a gym. It's like the biggest boxing gym. You said you're knowing possibly more for that now than you were as a professional athlete.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear a little bit of your advice around how you would go about building a business like that. Like, what's the kind of strategy behind it? When you're starting from zero, how are you, like, finding business? How did it all work? How did it come together?
We started off doing a boot camp on the beach for donations only. We never went into this for money.
Right.
We went into it because we loved it and we were passionate about it. And every bit of money that we earned, we put into the business. We rented out the empty warehouse. It was a Halloween store before we got it. And every time we made a little bit of money, we put it into the business. We just wanted it to look great and be good. the members loved the workouts and all that. Getting rich was never a thing that we thought about. Like making loads of money was never a thing that we thought about. And then we start building and getting grown and grown and grown. And I think that's a big mistake people make, is like they get into stuff to try and make money. Like my sister's a prime example. She's like 22. And she's like, I want to do this because I want to make this money. I mean, no, you don't. Yeah. Figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life. What are you passionate about? What you love to do? And then do that. And then start at the bottom. And then build, yeah. You know? Because I'm sure you've heard before, like, there's money in everything yeah. you can do. So if you love something and you're passionate about something, that's the best way to
yeah.
earn a living, by doing that thing, because you're going to do good work. But the hard thing is finding that one thing that you that yeah. you love to do, you know? And then the other hard thing is doing it for free for a long, long time, like we were doing, you know? And yeah. then... and. Because you've got to do that, and then start to earn a little bit of money here and there. But I think it can be done.
Man, that's a good start, though. Like, what are you prepared to do for free? That's probably going to narrow down and help you understand what you do love.
Yeah, exactly. And see, like, if money wasn't an issue and you were rich, what would you do every day?
Yeah.
Would do that, turn that into your business.
Yeah.
You know? And
could be worse things to do than train on the beach. Were you in Santa Monica then as well?
Yeah, no, yeah. I've just been in Beverly Hills, but yeah. Training a tennis court in Beverly Hills, yeah. Robbie Williams' tennis court. You know, so yeah, I was just seeing Josh, who's another trainer who comes with us, because we train like a few people. I said to him yesterday, and I don't really say so much about me, can you believe what we're doing now? We had the tunes on,
yeah.
We had the sun cream on, because it was like it's like a holiday right now. We're about to train and we're making money.
Yeah,
it's like amazing. But again, like, we love it, so that's why we're doing well.
Could you have seen that? However many years ago when you first set it up, could you have seen it being where it is now?
No, I never really thought so much about what the end goal is, yeah. You know, and it's just recently where we've really thought about it, and well, I've really been thinking about where the end goal is and what I want to do, because I can't train people for the rest of my life, and you know, so where do we want the business to go? How can we have an impact on so many people's lives around the world? So that's what we're working on right now.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, mate. Again, I was talking about this after the Tony Robbins thing, because it was kind of going around rumour with the people who are watching that he could be on one of his last tours because his vocal box is so fucked. That
oh, really?
Yeah, at some stage he probably won't be able to speak.
Right.
So that's a huge sacrifice wow. for him to basically have done what he loved for 40 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's just like... that's the difficulty, isn't it? Like, when is that enough? Like, if he's putting his name to it, he is Tony Robbins. He is everything. Like, there's a team around him, but it's him that has to do the work ultimately.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's Box and Burn, that's the gym. That's it. Rather than it being Tony Jeffries.
Like, yeah, exactly. So we can with Box and Burn, we can impact so many people's lives.
Yeah.
If it was just me, Tony Jeffries, I can't. Although I can with Box and Burn.
Yeah.
You know. So what we're doing now is like. Rather than me teaching 10 people how to box, I can teach 1,000 people how to teach boxing to other people.
That's amazing.
Right? And them 1,000 people, they teach 10 people each every day.
Yeah.
That's 10,000 people a day that I've had an impact with boxing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what we want to do with the gyms, and getting more gyms where you do teach a boxing burn class in your gym.
Yeah.
And now we teach you how to do that. We can impact hundreds of thousands of people every day, and that's the end goal with boxing for fitness.
Yeah, you know? No, that's amazing. I love it. So you mentioned Robbie Williams there. What are you doing with him?
So I train Robbie. I start training him in the beginning of the year. I think it was the 5th of January.
Yeah.
And I've been training him ever since. It's now, what is it, April 20th or something now. I've been training him for 4 months. I went to Vegas with him, training him in Vegas for 2.5 weeks. And it's been great. He's a real, real good lad. A real good lad. Been training him and his team. Got a great team around him. So that's good. It's enjoying. It's exciting.
How frequently do you train him?
Train him 5 times a week.
Five times a week?
Yeah, so go to his house in...
Great effort.
In Beverly Hills, yeah. Train him 5 times a week there.
How long's the session?
Between 60 minutes and 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Normally, sometimes they go a little bit over.
Good effort.
But
you're doing a few of them at once.
It's really good. There's like... between 4 and 8 people come, but it's me and another trainer goes.
Yeah.
But it's class. He's loving it. He's getting great results, and and I'm really enjoying it as well.
Yeah, I always think about the trainer in that, because it's tiring being the one hitting the pads and that, but is it tiring for you as well?
Yeah, it's tiring for the trainer doing catching the pads.
You're absorbing all the impact.
Yeah, and then doing the shoulder spine, which I had to do, which I've just been doing there.
Were you doing it with Robbie?
Yeah, just the shoulder spine with Robbie did.
Did you let him hit you?
Yeah, but he punches really hard, you know. So I don't let him hit us. I try to not let anyone hit us, like even the shoulders or body. But when the land, it's like, oh shit. But yeah, he caught me with a really good one today, actually.
Yeah. You're training him well then.
Yeah, I know, that's the thing. I'm training him well. If he hits us and hurts us, I'm taking the credit for that, you know. Yeah.
All right, awesome, mate. So what's your highlight in the week? What's your favourite thing to do? Because you said that you've got a few things, you're balancing a few different things.
Yeah. Honestly, my favourite thing is waking up in the morning when my daughters, when they jump in bed, I've got three young daughters, when they get in bed with us, just playing with them for a little bit. That's the highlight of the week. Probably a bit of a boring one for what you were expecting, but
But with the
business is being creative. I'm a very creative person, and like last night, I've just hired someone from the Philippines to help create video content, and for me, I love that shit. You know, I've been interviewing people for the last 10 days, and then finally finding someone and hiring them. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy getting a team, building a good solid team, and helping build systems for that team to make stuff run smoothly. But I'm in a great position right now where, with the education program, like I can really do that, where we can spend money to try and hire new people and stuff. So
what do you look for in people when you're recruiting?
Common sense.
Yeah.
Common sense. It's the hardest thing to find. Maybe it's just being here in LA. Where it is. It's so uncommon.
What's a typical question you'd ask in an interview to find that?
The first question I ask everyone in an interview is, tell me a little bit about yourself. And then just by that question there, you can kind of figure them out, what they're like.
What are you looking for? Like them to be excited about what they do and tell their story?
Well, they tell a story, but as well, it's just like I remember we interviewed one fella who he spoke, tell me a little about yourself. He spoke for 20 minutes, and I'm like, four or three letters. I'm like, definitely not. Like, no, nah, mate. And he was boring the shit out of us. I think I might ask him one more question after that. I interviewed another guy, and he was like, I said, so your resume says you're a personal trainer. I went, how many clients you got? We went, well, I'm a little bit of a different personal trainer. I train dogs. I'm a dog personal trainer. I was like, oh, all right. Then he went, yeah, so my clients are all dogs. I went, you understand that you're training, this is like you're going to be working with humans now? I've never worked with humans before. I've just worked with dogs. I'm like, it's a little bit different. He went, well, you know, I like to put them through agility tests and this test. And he's like just in a fucking all different world that he's on.
So he didn't get the job either.
We've had some like appearance, you know, how you dress. Like it's hard for people when they're coming to apply for a job in the fitness industry, because what do they wear? Do they wear a suit and a shirt and a tie, or do you come in fitness gear?
Yeah.
But either one is good as long as they look smart. Like interviewed some people who look like fucking tramps, and straight away from their appearance, I'm like, you kind of get the job dressed, like, you know. But I'm kind of over interviewing people now. I've interviewed hundreds of people. But if anyone's out there going for a job and interviewing, the biggest piece of advice I can give you is look into the company and see what the company do, see what the company goals are. Because if someone comes in the interview and like, I've seen Box and Burn, I know you're going in this direction, I want to be part of that team. And the best interviews I've had to people where they're like, I want this to be the last job I ever have, because this company seems the best. I love your vision, I love what you're about, what you stand for. I think this is great. I want to be part of this. I really want to be part of your team. If someone tells me that, they've got my attention, and I'm like, yes, I get excited about this.
Amazing.
So if you're ever going for a job interview, if you listen to this, you know, learn about the company and tell the interviewer that, you know. And even if they've got bad qualifications, and or they've not got very good qualifications or whatever, if they tell me that they want to be in this for the long haul, you know, being, you know.
Yeah, 100%. That loyalty is something that's not around very much anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. So, Tony, something I wanted to speak to you about and get your opinion on. We talk a lot on here about obstacles, overcoming these challenges, how they help us develop and grow into better people. I'm interested to know if you've got a standout obstacle that you could tell us about that you overcame and what you learned from it.
I think my obstacle was, like, what we spoke about is the plan B. Like, that was my biggest obstacle, is finding out what I'm going to do now. Yeah. Put all my life into boxing. I never thought it would ever come to an end, because that's all I've ever done that got ripped away from us. My obstacle was, what the fuck am I going to do now?
Mm.
You know? And then, like we spoke about, that's how I overcome that. Right now, I'm smooth sailing, touch wood. Like, life's a holiday right now. Yeah. I'm loving it. And when I say I'm loving it, you know, I've heard other people say, I'm loving life, I'm really positive, this is great. I still have the days where you wake up and you feel down.
Yeah.
And you feel shit. And I think it's very normal. And you feel a little bit depressed, and you feel like, oh, what's the purpose? What am I doing this for? No, I think everyone gets that.
Yeah.
Do you get it?
Yeah.
Right. I was listening to a podcast with Kevin Hart on Joe Rogan, and
I heard that. Yeah.
And he was like, "Nah, I'm always positive. I'm the most positive person in the world." I think, are you really? Because I don't know if I believe that or not. But
I didn't believe it when he said it as well. I really liked him, and I thought it was a good podcast.
Yeah.
Episode, but I can't believe that. You can't always be high.
No,
you can't, have to have the downs. Otherwise, how do you even tell if you're on a high?
Right. I get them moves. It's very rare now, but I still get them. And
what do you do? Like, do you put things? Do you put practices into place when you start to feel like that, or do you have like general practices you do every day? I've heard you talk about like the cold shower exposure and that sort of stuff.
I've seen that. If I'm feeling down, I get in a cold shower.
Yeah, straight away.
Get it as cold as it goes, 3 minutes, and that helps you somehow overcome it.
Yeah.
But I think when I say somehow, it helps you overcome it, because you've got to challenge yourself, and you do that challenge, and you get out there, you've just achieved a challenge.
Yeah.
That helps. That helps a little bit. So, I think, have you ever had one?
Yeah, I did it for a little while. I was going to do the Wim Hof course. He does one in Scotland, like a weekend that looks amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, to be honest, it's the easiest thing not to do, because when you're in a warm shower, you don't want to do it. Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen me into one, but I had an ice bath the other day. I've got 40 pounds of ice, two massive bags of ice, put them in, my shoulders have been sore.
Yeah.
And I got in that, and it was so fucking hard. So hard to do, because it's burning your skin. I kept my hips out, like my balls and that out. But I just kept my shoulders in, and it was so, so hard. But when I come out there, I felt amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So ice baths, cold showers.
Yeah.
I think them's the best things for doing when you're feeling down.
Yeah, I recommend them as well. I went for a period of doing them probably 3 or 4 times a week.
Mm.
And when I was doing it, it made me feel so much better. I think that it goes back to that thing, the Tony Robbins thing, about the physiology, the focus and the language. Like, as soon as you do that, your physiology is changing because you're freezing. Your focus is changing because you're trying to stay warm, ultimately, or not feel like you're freezing and want to get out,
right?
And then your language changes, because you're no longer thinking about whatever you're worried about, you're thinking
that's a perfect way to put it. Them's three huge benefits for having that cold shower. And I think getting over that, when you come out of it, and getting over that, what you've just done, you know, you feel hard. It's really good for mental toughness as well, because like you say, it's the easiest thing not to do it. So you know, just get it done.
Should we put something out there? Should we say a Take Flight and Tony Jeffries challenge?
Yeah.
That everyone who's listening goes and has a cold shower and lets us know how they get on.
Do it, send us an Instagram message and tell us that you've done it. That would be great.
Yeah. How long?
3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Well, you know what, right? When I first started doing it, I was doing it for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I thought I was... Then I just got over, like, fuck it, I'm going to do it for longer. Yeah. I'm going to do a minute. And then I got to 3 minutes. Now I wouldn't do it for less than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All so right. 30 seconds.
30 seconds to start with.
And as well, if you're in England, most of your listeners from England.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're in England... It's different, you know. And I used to tell people on my Instagram that take a cold shower, and like, it's alright saying that when you're living in California in the sun. Yeah. When you're in England, it's a bit different. And I was like, nah. I went back to England in August last year, and I was about to put a cold. I was like, it's too cold. It's too cold. You know,
that's the problem.
Yeah,
when it's pitch black outside, freezing in your house.
Yeah, last thing you want is a cold shower. Yeah, you want to hop off into the tea.
Exactly. All right, mate. So. Interested to know what the future holds then. You mentioned earlier about the vision of Box and Burn, but good to know some about the business and some about for yourself. What do you see happening?
I want Box and Burn to be in gyms around the world, like Box and Burn classes. So if you're a gym in North Carolina, or you're a gym in Dover, you know, and you want to have boxing, you can come to us and we can give you boxing in your facility. Yeah, and if we can get in 1,500 gyms and each gym's training 100 people a day, we're going to affect 150,000 people a day with boxing, and that's the ultimate goal. And I don't see why we can't do that. You know, I really don't. And yeah, that if that comes off, that would be great, and we're going to work towards that and get that done. And my personal goal is to be happy. You know, I think it might sound a bit cheesy, but everyone says that shit. But the what is success? Successful is being happy. If you stack shelves in Morrison's and you're happy as fuck, you've won. I think Gary Vaynerchuk says something like that as well. But if you do that, you've won in life. You know, that for me, I wouldn't be happy doing that. If you work in a coffee shop and you love it and you're happy, you've won. So my goal is to be happy as much as I can.
I find that a difficult one, because like, I think about it a lot. The person who is happy stacking shelves in Morrison's, when is it our role to enlighten them to the fact that there's more to life? Are they just happy doing that because they don't know anything else? Sometimes feel a responsibility to say, but then are you affecting their genuine happiness, or is it just their happiness within their understanding of what is available to them?
I don't know what you're saying, but I've thought before. I remember I say stacking shelves in Morrison's was because I was in England. It was a few years ago, when I was a bit stressed about something happened in the business. I was arguing with my business partner about something, and we're texting, and I was all stressed out. And when you're a business owner and you're working for yourself, you kind of work on paycheck to paycheck, especially at first.
Yeah.
So I'm working paycheck to paycheck, stressed out about this. And I went into Morrison's and I seen a fella stacking shelves, and someone up and went, "Where's the ketchup?" He was about 50 years old. He turned around, he was the happiest person in the world, took this person the ketchup. Yeah. And I thought, that guy there, he knows what he's getting each week, he knows what hours he can have off work, he knows when he can go on holiday. He goes home, have a beer with his wife, watch Coronation Street or whatever the fuck he watches. And I thought, he's sound, he's happy. I can see that. I soon stepped out of that, you know. And but I can see why they're happy. But exactly what you're saying is, do we need to show them there's more to life than living in Sunderland or wherever you're living? You know.
I just feel like someone like him, there must be something there, because like, as human beings, we're built and we're here to progress and develop and get better and better and better. So there's got to be some lack of contentment there with him not progressing to a degree. Now I don't know whether that is for everybody, but there's the example where you look at the partner in a law firm, the lawyer who's worked his whole life to become the partner, and then you've got the people who live in the mountains, the spiritual people who live up there and meditate every day.
Right.
Both of them probably think they're really successful in their own rights. But the lawyer has no spiritual success, and the monk has no business success or career success. Mm. So there's got to be an element of unfulfillment somewhere, because part of their life isn't being filled in some way.
But what's your unfulfillment?
Personally?
Yeah.
Right now, it's the fact that... So there's a couple of things. The first one is that I'm unfulfilled because the thing that pays me and the thing that allows me to do things like fly to LA to do this and to go out for dinner and buy drinks and whatever is a job that I don't enjoy. So that's my first one.
What's your job?
So right now I work for a company called Salesforce. They're a tech company. They're a great company. They're a massive global business. Like, it's from the outside in, it looks like a really good job, but it's just not what I want to do.
Right.
Because ultimately, this is the second part, is that, and it's interesting because it's the main message I'm getting from everything you're saying, really, is the thing that I really want to do is make as big a contribution as possible. And that job only, it restricts me to helping various businesses streamline their efficiencies.
Right.
Like, that's it. Mm. That's not exciting for me to talk about. It's not exciting for me to help them with those challenges. And when I see them successful with using that platform, it doesn't excite me in the slightest.
Right.
Whereas doing things like this and having conversations with you like this does, sharing that with lots of people, and hopefully they get benefit from it in the same way you were speaking about your programs that could help 100 people, then share that with 100 people, share that with 100 people. So, but like, the message I'm getting from you is the same thing which I'm striving for, which is contribution to as many people as possible.
And that the satisfaction you get from that is amazing. What are you going to do about it?
So this is the start of it, to be honest. So it's getting bigger and bigger, and then the events will be the second piece of the puzzle, and that's going to get hopefully more contribution to fewer people, because it's only be the people in the room, but getting face time with those people, yeah. I think will have a bigger impact. Hopefully this continues to grow and impact more people on a mass scale. And then retreats will give people that even more intimate experience of a 3-day retreat.
That's what I do, retreats.
Yeah, that would be like the kind of the third piece.
Yeah.
So the retreats will then, it will give people the ability to then completely remove, and if they want to go down this journey of self-discovery, which I'm doing and which you're doing, they've got that opportunity to learn lots in a short period of time, because I think that doing it intensely for a short period of time is really important rather than dipping in and out. And it's funny, you're talking about Robbie Williams doing 5 boxing sessions a week.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I do 1 a week. What's his progress going to be over 4 months versus mine?
Yeah.
So that kind of like immersion is really important, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the plan at the minute.
Right. No, I like it. Sounds good. My own fulfillment is business, not having all of them 100,000 people a day, you know.
You want it now,
already. I want to be there now.
Yeah.
No, but you need to enjoy the journey and enjoy doing it, which I get it. Patience is tough for me. So, you know, I'm not that patient. I want it now. I want to be there now.
Do you think that comes back because you're an athlete and that's kind of what you're drilled and trained to do? Like,
yeah.
You get that immediate feedback from punching someone, knocking them out, and winning a fight.
Well, even with a fight, it's like a six or eight week training camp. So you've got 6 or 8 weeks and then you've reached your goal.
Yeah.
As a professional. And so it's like, it's short, really. If I knew in 6 or 8 weeks, I would be excited that I was going to reach the goal.
Yeah.
But I guess coming back to the Olympics, I was on an 8-year training program. That's a long, long term goal. But I guess what you've got to do, and I'm just thinking about this now, is you've got to put short goals in place. Like with the training for the Olympics in them 8 years, I had the European Championships 1 year, I had the World Championships next year, I had different tournaments. So I had the shorter goals before I could reach the big goal.
Yeah.
So right now, it's funny, I'm thinking about this now, I'm going to have to start doing it. I'm thinking about the long goal, how far away that is.
How far do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of years. There's so much to it, but I'm thinking about that rather than thinking about the... or creating shorter goals. I guess this would be the same for you, something for you to do.
Yeah.
Don't so much think about that big one, but you are doing it right now by doing this and getting a bigger following and growing your stuff.
Yeah, you know? Mate, I think it's amazing. It's literally something I'm desperately trying to get better at, which is enjoying the process, just like completely being involved in the process. Because I'm like you, like I played sport to a decent level before, so it's all like immediate.
Mm.
And even in the job that I do, it's sales. So again, it's just like you're always looking to that goal, then you achieve it and you're like, ah, what next? So just trying to enjoy the process of doing this. Like, it's easier with doing podcasts and having conversations and stuff like that. It's good, but it's still at the same time, I would ideally like everyone listen to this now and then get feedback straight away. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think like I used to do it, and I should get better at it as well, but writing down everything that you want, whether it's physically, financially, career wise in your family, anything, socially, whatever it is, and then write down how long you roughly think it's going to take you to get it. Like literally everything you could ever imagine possible. Like, what do you want? The ideal world for you, what is it? Write all those things down and then like write down 1, 3, 5 or 10 next to it.
Is that a Tony Robbins thing?
It's actually Jim Rohn,
right,
who's Tony Robbins' mentor.
Yeah.
It's just a really good way to like do that. But again, it's so easy to say it. How many people actually sit down and do it?
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. Executing, it's like listening to podcasts like this or watching videos of Gary Vaynerchuk or whoever, all of the information's there for free.
Yeah.
It's just doing it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone was saying the other day that ignorance is a choice now, because everything's available to us.
Right,
we can have it now.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
All right, Tony, we do the same 3 questions at the end of every episode. The reason we do that is so everyone has immediate actionable advice they can take away, incorporate into their lives and hopefully drive their performance forward.
Right.
So the first one is, is there anything that you've discovered or come across recently that you're particularly excited about that perhaps other people could look into as well?
Yes, there's a website called onlinejobs.ph, which where you can hire virtual assistants from the Philippines for like $2.50 an hour.
Amazing.
And they've got bachelor degrees. There's a guy the guy I was telling you, I've just hired last night, because I've got a podcast as well. I'm going to record the podcast and video it, send it to him. He's going to create show notes, he's going to edit it, and he's going to upload it all of the other platforms, which is going to save me 3 hours of time or whatever it takes, and create a graphic for it, and it's $4 an hour. So that'll take him like 4 hours, so it's what's $16, which, so my time, my few hours of time is worth a lot more than $16, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So onlinejobs.ph, I'm very excited about that now, and I'm also looking for a virtual assistant on there to do other stuff as well. You can get people who create graphics, do video edits, do your data entry, do whatever the fuck you want, you know? So yeah, I'm excited about that.
Mate, that's amazing. That's one of the best ones we've had for that answer. That's so good. Yeah, that's really good.
So good.
Yeah. That's on, it's in the Tim Ferriss 4-Hour Work Week, he talks about that. But the way that he explains it is like...
That website?
No, not the website, just the idea of a virtual assistant.
Right.
But mate, that's amazing. I'm definitely going to look into that.
Look into that, mate, for yourself and for this stuff right now. Because before you left here, you could, if you had it, you could send them this podcast.
Yeah.
Forget about it. Done.
Right, you know, that'd be amazing.
Cost you a tenner.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 4-hour work week, it's funny you mentioned that. That's something what I really learned about outsourcing, and I love the idea behind that, to building that strong team to systemize everything, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
All right, the second one of these is, you obviously have had so many practices during your boxing career and in your business career that have helped you to get to high levels of performance. Mm-hmm. If you had to give every listener one thing, I know we've already done the cold shower exposure, but you have to give them one habit or routine to add to a daily practice that's going to help them, what would it be?
That's a good one. One habit, one routine for each day. I don't know. I've got me routine on a morning, which is like, get up and drink a huge glass of water the first thing, you know.
Is it just water? Do you put anything in it?
No, just water. Yeah. The first thing I do before I have my coffee, and then I have my smoothie, which is blueberries, spinach, cherries, and chia seeds.
Amazing.
So that's good for you, and avocado, and that's good for your brain.
Yeah, all the antioxidants.
Yeah, with me being a bit punch drunk, it helps.
Does it really?
I don't know if it does or not, but it's proven it's supposed to be helping your brain, so if it does, hopefully it does, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, just the one thing is, be consistent with whatever you're doing, you know. Don't get distracted, don't say yes to loads of podcasts if you're at that level, or you know, just do your one thing, and it's going to be hard. And you know, I told my sister like, you know, you've got to work for free to do what you want to do eventually. You've got to go through the shit times to get the best times. Like when I was waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go running, then getting punched in off big ugly men who was trying to punch me head in, you know. You've got to get through that, and now my life's the best it's ever been because of that, you know. So you've got to go through the hard times before you get the good times. Kind of drifted off the question there.
Nah, mate,
but I think the consistency is a big one.
Yeah, no, I love that, mate. And even just saying the water thing there, like, it's so important.
Yeah, drinking the water.
I'll do the same thing, mate. Smash a big glass of water as soon as I wake up, because I can't remember how much we lose, but I think it's like half a litre just through breathing.
Right.
I might be exaggerating there, but it's a lot during the night through like 8 hours or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, I've got one for you. I've got one. This is the biggest one that I think you can take away, is turn off all your notifications on your phone so nothing pops up on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, I've got mine off. Like, the worst thing you can have is Instagram notifications, Facebook notifications. So if we're sitting here now, and let's say if we're sitting here now having a conversation without the podcast on, it pops up a notification of Johnny's asking you a question, and I look at that there. The conversations, my mind's just went from there to there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not getting the most out of this conversation. Yeah. So, yeah. Turn off all your notifications. I've got my text messages off. I've got everything off apart from
all
the
day.
All day. Day. So when I look at my phone, I'm ready to, whenever I want to. In fact, I've got one notification on. That's when I've done a sale on the online program. So I'm like, yes. Which makes us feel
what
good.
What was that on the Shopify, is it? Or
no, well, I've got two. I've got the Shopify one. I've got the Boxing One Academy online one from Stripe.
Does a little ka-ching.
Yeah. Yes. But that's different. It makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Everything else is off on my phone.
That's good, mate. Yeah. I might have to... I have all of them off apart from my email. I might turn my email off as well, you know.
Yeah, get your email off, because you look at your email when you're ready to look at your email, not when someone emails
you. Yeah, so true.
You know?
Yeah.
unless it's something really urgent, like let's see if my wife needs it, I'll put my text messages on and have it on.
Or she'll call you or something.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Awesome. That's a really good one. All right, man. The last one is, imagine there's two versions of yourself. If you take yourself back to, I'm going to take you back to two moments, so pick one or the other. But either when you're 10 years old and you didn't fancy going in the gym four or five times a week and getting your head punched in, when you were just learning the craft of boxing, or the moment when you just retired boxing and you were going into business, you were making that transition and you didn't, you know, it was the unknown, you didn't know much about where you were going, what you were going to do. What's the key differentiator between that version of yourself who went on and had all the success that you've had and smashed it and done amazing things, and the version of Tony who would not have done those things,
right,
would have acted differently?
You see, and what's the difference?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? I think confidence. I don't know if this is the right answer, but when I was 10, I don't think I'd have the confidence to go through all that. Now after boxing, I've got the confidence to do anything. Is that right or not?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I never thought I could have done it. Like I said, I got forced to do it. I got dragged through it to do that. But then now it's like, I want you to tell me I can't do it. You tell me I can't do it, because you know what that's going to do? That's going to motivate us to do it. And I like it when people who I respect, who I work with, or just tells me, "No, you, I don't think you can do that." All right, now watch. Tell me I can't. Now watch.
Prove you wrong mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that fighter's mentality. Tell me I can't win this fight, I'm going to punch his fucking head in. You know, that's what it's like. And I get like really, really pumped when someone tells us that I can't. And I think when I was 10, back then, when I was going to the gym, I wasn't like that, you know. But now I've just been bred into us.
Yeah.
No, I am like that.
Amazing. Awesome, mate. Thanks so much, man.
Good, mate.
I really appreciate it.
I hope everyone liked it. Yeah.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Nice,
I think people are going to get loads out of it, so thanks so much.
You also, good stuff.
Appreciate it, mate.
Nice one.
Thanks. So there it is. I really hope you enjoyed that. You can hear much more from Tony on his own podcast called Boxing Life. He has some amazing people on there, including Gary Vee. So you can go and listen to all his episodes over on Boxing Life Podcast, which is a brilliant podcast. Also, go and follow Tony at Tony_Jeffries on Instagram for all his updates on there. Has some great videos on boxing technique, some great motivational content as well. So go and follow Tony there. And we're going to go for the Take Flight and Tony Jeffries Cold Water Challenge too. So if you want to take part in that, do let us know. Whether you want to screenshot your phone, listen to the episode and give us a rundown on how you're getting on the challenge. Or if you want to, how would you do this without being weird, take a photo doing the however you want to do it, share it with us, let us know how you're getting on. It's such a good practice to be doing. As I mentioned in the podcast earlier, I tried it out for a little while last year and I got such great benefits from it, but it was a little bit too cold towards the end of the year. So now we're coming towards the summer, it's getting warmer, we've got no excuse, so let's go for it. The Take Flight and Tony Jeffries Cold Water Challenge, and let us know how you're getting on. So, as I mentioned, I have an unbelievable announcement that I am so, so pleased to share. You might already know that next month, from Monday the 13th of May to the 19th of May, it's Mental Health Awareness Week. I've been quite open on the podcast about battling my own demons and my own struggles and the things I've gone through and continue to go through, to be honest, which is why it brings me so much pleasure to be able to share that during Mental Health Awareness Week for 2019, I'll be partnering with the incredible charity CALM. It stands for the Campaign Against Living Miserably, and they do incredible work aiming to reduce the number of suicides in male youths. And since launching, the suicide rate in this age range has been reduced by over 50%, which is incredible. But they don't just help young men. Anyone can use their services and the helplines and the online chats, which I'll be discussing in much more detail during Mental Health Awareness Week. So throughout these dates, I'll be dropping between 3 and 5 episodes. I've got a couple recorded already and some booked in. So trying to get closer to 5, to be honest, but we'll see how we get on. And there'll be some amazing people, all who have had similar battles and come through the other side to see far greater times and actually see that the darkness is really a bit of a blessing now, which is an amazing message to be sharing. And I hope it can motivate people who may be suffering with a similar thing or have gone through it in the past or know somebody who has.
I'll also be running an event on the Thursday, the 16th of May in the evening, probably starting in and around 6:30. I'm still organising the venue. It'll all be announced soon. It will be in London. That's what I know for sure. And I'd love to see as many of you as possible there on the night to support the cause. So if you keep an eye on my Instagram, at WhittleTakeFlight, flight spelled F-L-1-G-H-T, and the website flight.co.uk for all updates, as tickets will be limited. I imagine they're going to go quite quick. We've got some really, really awesome people who are going to be attending. There's going to be a keynote speaker who's brilliant, and there's going to be a panel chat with some really, really great people, some who have been on the podcast in the past. And it's going to be a good opportunity to see these people speak live and get closer to other people who are interested in this subject, and generally people who are trying to be better as well. I'm so, so looking forward to it. What a way to start the Take Flight events. Keep posted for more details. And in the meantime, stay positive, stay motivated, and take flight.